When I was just a little kid, my Uncle Larry, who many of you know, did a favor for my mother and for my father by driving me from Houston to Palestine, Texas, to stay with my grandparents for a few weeks over the summer. But because I was only 4 years old, it turned out to be more complicated than Larry thought. And that this was my first time to be away from home, to be away from my parents. Initially, as we drove away, I was fine. But as it started to get darker outside, I began to put together that every minute that passed and every mile we advanced up I-45 was taking me farther and farther away from my parents, my brother, my sister, and our home. And at a loss as to what to do, and with an eye on stopping the car, I reached for the most effective go-to in every four-year-old's arsenal in that situation. I turned to Larry and told him I was carsick. And no doubt concerned about me, but also for the interior of his car, he quickly pulled over, gravel spinning up behind us to the shoulder, where once we'd stopped, I immediately found that I felt much better. However, after about 10 minutes of not getting sick, Larry suggested we get back in the car and keep going, to which I reluctantly agreed. But as soon as we started moving again, I said I was sick again. So we pulled over again, and the exact same process played out in the exact same way. Well, the third time this happened, somewhere around Madisonville, Larry, being astute, figured out I wasn't actually physically sick at all, but that I was homesick. So accordingly, he adopted a new strategy, and it was this. Though he kept going forward, what he told me was that we had turned around and were now headed back to Houston. Well, about 20 minutes passed like this until I got suspicious, and I began to cross-examine him about it. And he assured me again, "No, we're headed home to Houston, Greg, don't worry." To which I shook my head and replied, "Well, if that's your position, then I'm going to be sick again." And we continued like this the next hour or so, with Larry insisting to me that we are headed home to Houston and me insisting to Larry that I was going to be sick again, until finally I fell asleep. And the next morning, though I woke up in Palestine and felt much better in the daylight, and though eventually I came to trust my Uncle Larry again, the one thing that hasn't changed is this: that while there's medicine we can take when our bodies are sick, homesickness is something else entirely. Because homesick is not a disease of the body, but rather one of the soul. And that's what our text today addresses: a way, a path, a sequence to follow to recenter our souls and relocate that feeling, that sense of home inside of us. A prescription for us, if you will, for when it's not our bodies that are sick, but for when, due to whatever reason, we feel dislocated from our souls, when we feel that sense of fear, when we feel that alienation from our spirits. And that sequence, this prescription for us, is found in Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42. And it's the story of Jesus coming home into the house of two of his friends, two sisters, one named Mary and one named Martha. And I'll be reading from Kenneth Wiest's expanded Greek translation. Again, it's Luke 10, verses 38 through 42, and it goes like this. "Now, as they were going on their way, he himself, Jesus, entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him as a guest in her home. And she had a sister called Mary, and Mary, having seated herself beside the Lord's feet, was listening to his word. Martha, though, was going around in circles, overoccupied with preparing the meal, and then bursting in upon Jesus, she, Martha, assumed a stance over him and said, 'Lord, is it not a concern to you that my sister has let me down to be preparing the meal alone. Speak therefore to her at once, that she take hold and do her part with me. In answering, the Lord said, Jesus said to her, Martha, Martha, you're worried and excited about many things, but few things there is need, or of one. Mary has chosen out for herself the good portion, which is of such a nature that it shall not hastily be snatched away from her. This is the word of the Lord. Now, there's a lot to unpack here, but before we do, a quick word in defense of Martha and the Marthas of the world. A little public service announcement for Team Martha. This is one of my favorite quotes. It's Rolling Stone writer P.J. O'Rourke who once said, "Everyone wants to save the world, but no one wants to help Mom with the dishes." And it crosses my mind, as it might yours, that the meal here is not going to serve itself. Someone's got to do the work. And an extra gold star for you today, if you've noticed that within the Gospel of Luke, our text today follows immediately after the story of the Good Samaritan, a story in which Christ lauds and praises a character who's famously Martha-like in his industry and his willingness to sink himself knee-deep into the thankless work that no one else would do. So we ought not to read the story today simply as Mary good and Martha bad, but rather as a moral teaching about situational awareness. And it's in Mary that we see how to hone such awareness to keep our restless souls centered. So with some real admiration and grace for Martha, let's now focus on Mary and Mary's approach, and examine this prescription for renewing our spirits, renewing our souls today, by considering three distinct words that emerge from this story, and here they are. Here's the prescription: sit, simplify, and see. First, the word sit. Well, maybe you've heard of Watchman Nee. Watchman Nee might be the most consequential Christian evangelist since the Apostle Paul. In 1922, Nee started what's known as the local church movement in China, establishing churches throughout the countryside of that most populous of nations. He organized conferences, he set up informal meetings, putting together thousands and thousands of Bible students and church workers together for the gospel. Then following the communist revolution, Nee was, just as Paul had been, imprisoned for his faith, imprisoned for the gospel. And he spent the last 20 years of his life in jail. For Nee also, like Paul, became a prolific writer. His most famous book was entitled Sit, Walk, Stand. It's a book in which Nee wrote that as Christians, we're unlikely to be able to stand up to overcome evil and injustice in the world, or even inside our own lives, if we don't walk in discipleship with Christ and with others. And we'll never have the strength, he wrote, to walk like this until first we simply sit at the feet of Christ. For Christianity, Nee wrote in a famous passage of Sit, Walk, Stand, he wrote, "Christianity begins not with a big do, but with a big done. We're saved," he said, "not by doing anything ourselves, but in simply reposing our belief and our trust in God's love and God's grace." And this idea, this notion, this concept is exactly what Luke captures, almost like a gifted playwright in this dramatic passage. Picture in your mind's eye how he describes the physical posture of the two sisters. Martha is moving. Martha is going around in circles before then assuming a stance over Christ. Whereas Mary's described as having taken up a posture in stillness. Mary's in repose under the word, under Christ's gospel teachings. Which begs the question for us, how often do we in silence and in receptivity, in a posture of submission under God's direction. Just simply sit still and breathe. Not seeking anything, not pursuing anything, not doing anything, not saying anything, just sitting still before God. You know, as Americans, as Texans, as Houstonians, even sometimes as South Mainers, we have a distinct bias toward motion, often mistaking movement with progress and busyness with gaining ground. Perhaps, as our text suggests today, if we just stopped careening ever forward, ever downhill, over-occupied, overwrought, over-teched, over-scheduled, and forever over our skis, we just might hear God whispering to us, sit at my feet a moment and just breathe. Just listen, and I will recenter your soul within you. Whether it's in prayer, in quiet meditation, or in Sabbath, God puts on offer to us, as Rabbi Abraham Heschel wrote, a palace of time which we're constantly being summoned to enter, but which requires no commands that we lay down our arms in the bustle and the dissonance and the yoke of toil and stop wrestling with the world and instead turn to just caring for the eternity that God's implanted in our souls. If you're homesick, if your soul's sick, if you're anxious, if you're disoriented or dislocated, if you need to be restored, renovated, realigned, or revived, then the first thing to do is just take a break. Take the draw. Rest in the Sabbath. Sit down in stillness each day in the presence of God for just a moment and breathe. Simplify. Simplify. Let's go back to our text for a moment and try to picture Christ again, seated, looking over the room, Mary at his feet, Martha standing over him, all manner of prepared food set atop a nearby table about to be served, and now Martha's asked him to spur Mary to get up and to help. And Christ casts his hand across the room, across the table, pointing at all the many dishes, says this. This is enough. It's more than enough. Martha, you're worried about so many things. Right now, we don't need any more food. We don't need any more dishes. We don't need any more of anything. Really, just a few things are needed. Really, in fact, just one. You know, in fashion, in writing and business and our work, we often try to do too much. Ernest Hemingway told his writer friends, keep things simple. Stop trying to impress everyone. Cut out the extraneous language that doesn't make your point or serve your narrative. Kill your darlings, he told them. Coco Chanel taught the fashion world, get rid of the frills and the fuss. With simple, elegant patterns and cuts, she elevated things like comfort and ease of motion in her clothes. She told women, always remove the last accessory that you put on. Simplify. And whether it's Hemingway in literature or Chanel on the runway, this notion isn't just aesthetic, it's purposeful. As they tell us, as Christ did, pare back the too much which takes away from the most important, the focal point of our stories and the true aim of our lives. Are you worried? Are you excited about many things, overoccupied, going too fast in too many directions at once? Dispirited by your buzzing phone, caught up in the feeling of just trying to keep up? This week, don't add anything, but try to cut something out. To pare back. To pare back what's not really needed to make room for what God's telling us is more important. In fact, most important of all. Simplify. Well, the last word in the prescription is the word see. It's what a recentered, reseated soul gives us, the situational awareness to see things that others might miss. 17 years before he commanded Apollo 13, Jim Lovell was commanding a fighter plane over the Sea of Japan in combat conditions. And as Lovell later recounted in his autobiography, because of those conditions, his carrier, the USS Shangri-La, was operating with its running lights off. Lovell's radar had jammed, and his homing signal was rendered useless. And lost and in trouble, he flipped on his cockpit's map light when suddenly everything else in the cockpit shorted out. Now, with all his instruments out and his lights gone, he couldn't even tell what his altitude was. In fact, the only thing Lovell knew for sure was that he was almost out of fuel. But as he began to consider the dangerous prospect of ditching into the ocean, he looked down into the darkness below and saw an extended green trail in the water. He said it was laid out beneath him perfectly like a long green glowing carpet. It was the algae. The algae, that phosphorescent bioluminescent stuff that gets churned up in the wake of a big ship at sea. And there he saw and had the awareness to recognize the trail was just leading him right back to the Shangri-La. "We never know," Lovell wrote, "just what'll transpire to get us home." Look, we continue to feel up in the air. Sometimes we feel in the dark and without our lights and without our instruments, but there's always a way home. And God reveals it to us most clearly and most luminously when we follow the prescription. Sit, simplify, and see.